And the Growing the Game podcast brought to you by Mako Collision Repair, located at 2337th Avenue in Regina. Wheel Estate, you got a travel trailer you want to rent, or you want to rent a travel trailer, check them out at wheelestate.ca. And it's also brought to you by our next guest, Paul Waldo over at Royal LePage. Paul, got any hot deals on the go right now?
You know what we do? The market is starting to heat up. Once again, we got everything starting at that $200,000 mark and all the way up to about $900,000. We have condos, townhomes, single-family homes, anything and everything that you're looking for. Used, old, mature, and all types of neighborhoods. So please give me a call at 306-502-5355, or you can email me at paul@homesregina.ca.
What sets a home apart when you're selling it? Like, what's the one thing, you know, when you show up to a home, like what will make somebody say, oh, I like this home?
You know, they normally say it's essentially the five senses, right? The second you walk into a house, you know, obviously what you can see visually, what you can smell, sense will either deter or draw people towards, you know, if it doesn't smell all that well, or you know, you've got a really, really bad stench. So when it comes to obviously to showing and previewing homes, you want to make sure that the things that you can, you know, see, touch, smell, are presented to the best. And they usually say, you know, you usually know probably within the first 45 seconds if that home is appealing to you or not. So.
All right, good. That's a good tip. Okay, Paul, let's talk about some football here because we both love football as well. And when we're talking football, let's start in BC last week where Marcel Young lays out that streaker. And he wasn't really a streaker because he was wearing, if you're going to streak, be naked. I mean, come on, put some effort into it. So this guy's wearing a Lion shirt with some boxers on. He gets laid out. Everybody's all over Marcel Young. I think, you know what? You run onto the field, you're getting it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you're invading somebody's space, invading somebody's, work environment, and that's what you get. I mean, the security guards can tackle you, and I think that's the whole point, right? That the security guards can tackle you as they're there to prevent you from doing what you're not supposed to be doing, and why can't a regular patron, a bystander, or the athlete that's on the field?
And did he ever lay him out, though, hey?
Sure did. Got him good. Got him really good.
Did you ever play in a game where there was a streaker run by you or in a game that you played in? Did you have any of that happen?
You know what we did? We had one earlier on in my career. He didn't even really make it to the field. Security got to him, I think, in the corner of the end zone, and he was on the opposite end of where the ball was at the time. But I don't know. I think as a player, I know for me, I just kind of laugh about it. And it is what it is. But I think the more you think about it, it is really stupid. I don't really think it provides entertainment for anybody other than the guy who's trying to get on TV or do whatever he's trying to do. So
Paul Waldo joining us here. It's Paul and Ball on Football here on the Growing the Game podcast. As we look at the first game for the Rough Riders, it was an efficient game. I have to snicker how many people weren't really that happy with the win. You just beat the defending Grey Cup champion Toronto Argonauts. First time in 4 years they won a season-opening game. It's almost like, yeah, here's some ice cream. Oh, it's not cold enough. Like, come on, they won the game. They won the game, man.
Right. I think you're always going to have, it's never good enough. I think. I think a lot of times for people, in expectations, I think as an athlete are those indeed, but it's kind of weird to hear it from the fans. Once again, obviously opening night, I mean, I can imagine if we would have lost, what everybody would have been saying. But I thought they went out there and did a great job defending Grey Cup champions, obviously, and for this team coming off a preseason and two games that obviously didn't show very well. There was a lot of concerns. I figured there should have been a lot more optimism after this win in comparison to what people were saying just the following week.
As a previous week. As a defensive guy, you got to be happy with the way that team played last week.
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what we expected, I think, for them to not only fly around, be pretty assignment sound. You know, there weren't a whole lot of blown coverages or big plays that were given up, obviously. We can go back to a year ago, Ballsy. When the Riders were, I think it was Winnipeg, they were playing up by I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think they're up 17 points. And then I think Dressler scored two touchdowns in both. on two busted coverages in literally 15 seconds. It was insane. So once again, to see them come out there, be efficient, and more importantly, actually make some big plays when they had to. You know, your offense is going to struggle at times. It's always going to take time for them to get going and to finally build a process after a few games and the chemistry. But defensively, you know, they did what they had to do, came out, made good plays, and they were pretty efficient.
You know, it's funny because you mentioned the Riders last year lost the season opening game to Winnipeg 43-40, an exciting game, and they lost. They win this one in kind of a, I won't say boring, but efficient style. So would you rather have your team lose exciting or win boring? I'm picking win boring.
Absolutely. And anybody who wants to tell you different is they're insane. At the end of the day, it's all about the wins, right? Getting into the win column. And they're not all going to be pretty. They're not all going to be exciting. You know, it's not like where you're going to throw for 500-plus yards every game and do crazy things and break records. But I think they did what they had to do, and it's the making of a solid foundation.
And Collaros did what he needed to do, 213 yards passing, a touchdown. But that touchdown pass was a beautiful throw to Roosevelt. Put it right in an area that only Roosevelt could get. So that showed you what Zach Collaros can do. And he made some good throws with guys in his face, too.
He did, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the first couple of drives, I don't think, showed really well, I think, for the offense in general. I think they got, you know, that Toronto front got to him pretty aggressively in the first two or three drives, and finally he was kind of able, I think, to settle in there. I mean, you know, that one that he threw the name in was a dirt. He fired that one in there in a very tight window, and once again was able to make pretty efficient throws. And then it looked really good once he finally settled down and got calm in the pocket.
And let's talk about Charleston. This guy was flying around. He's not going to have three sacks every game, but he came as advertised for sure.
I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, you know, don't expect that or that type of production every game, but it just goes to show the type of player that he is. It shows how disruptive he can be. And once again, we always talked about, you know, Chris Jones wanting to either be very, very aggressive or relax, only rush three, and then let the guys on the back end do what they do. So to have guys like Charleston and Willie Jefferson, two of the best probably pass rushers in the league, you're able to do that. And Charleston showed that on Friday night there.
I want to talk about three more guys on defense. You mentioned one there, Willie Jefferson and Derek Moncrief, two guys that are very athletic. They seem to be around the ball all the time. Willie Jefferson's chasing guys downfield in coverage, and Derek Moncrief is just getting better and better.
I mean, you can't. You probably can't ask for two more athletic players in their respective positions. I mean, like I said, Willie's a guy who, you know, was a former receiver at one point in time in his high school or going into his college career, and he looks like, and he's just so active and he's so disruptive. And then a guy like Moncrief, has there been a better player in the last 6-7 weeks? I think from the beginning of training camp. So it's just one of those guys where they're two great additions, and they're really starting to finally get comfortable and come into their own. So it's exciting to watch them grow. Obviously, as players, get active and just cause a disturbance. That's what you want. Even on that interception turn for a touchdown, I believe Willie Jefferson was downfield throwing big blocks. So it's pretty cool.
And a guy who we noticed on the field last week, 34-year-old Mr. Consistency, Jovan Johnson. Just talk, you played that position. Talk about playing that position at that age.
You know, I remember, you know, not only playing that position, even towards, you know, the middle part of my career, you know, where I just started the bulk of the games I did. And I remember watching Jovan Johnson play. In one of those years, he was the MOP, he's the most outstanding player of the league. And I just always remember watching him and like his patience and just his football IQ. He's very, very cerebral. And then to go back to this past weekend, I think he made two plays in the first quarter where he was isolated with S.J. Green to the field where the space is obviously enormous, and had S.J. In the waggle and was able to break up two different patterns. So just it goes to show his name suits himself very well, and that's why he's in the league 12 years later, still playing and still doing what he does.
7 of the 9 starting running backs in week 1 were 30 or older. The oldest is Jerome Messam. He looked like his mind was going faster than his feet in the first week, but he still had 20 carries for around 80 yards. Is that what we can kind of expect, you think, from Jerome Messam? Just, 80 yards in a cloud of dust and get those tough yards when the Riders need it? Because really, a couple of his runs closed out the game.
No, I think so. I mean, the reality of it is that's his first game he's played in this year, right? 2018. Yeah. Didn't play any preseason games, so I expected rest from him. And he didn't. He just looks like he got those tough yards. He was, ground and pound, and he was able to close out the games at the end. That's obviously one thing that he does very well. That's really good in his arsenal. He's a big, strong runner who can essentially kill the clock and run the game out. But then, the one thing that actually impressed me is obviously him not putting the ball on the ground, and once again, touching the ball for the first time, and not only carrying the ball for the first time all year, but to carry it for 20 plus times to be efficient. I think he was, in that 70-yard range. That's exactly what I expect. What I expect to see him get more loose and make bigger plays and be more explosive once that playbook opens up and they start getting into the season.
Okay, lastly, Paul, short week for the Rough Riders. Just talk about how that changes things when you're on a really short week because they only really two good practice days and then you're on a plane to Ottawa.
Yeah, I think I know as a player myself, I love the short weeks. I guess especially if you didn't play all that well the week before, you kind of had to get up and move on. But it really doesn't give you time to just be lackadaisical. I mean, you got to get up and get at it. And obviously, from a prep standpoint, you mentally got to prepare for who you're playing against. I think the one tough or challenging part will be is that Ottawa didn't play last week, so obviously not having great film on them will be a little bit more challenging. But once again, they just got to be able to continue to progress. And they came away pretty healthy for the most part. It should be a good one.
Okay, Paul, before we go, where can they get a hold of you in the real estate game?
Once again, you call me at 306-502-5355 or paul@homesregina.ca, and Snapchat, the Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, where the home expert team at Paul Walder.
And you find him on the Rough Rider Radio Network each week with me too, and he will be doing that for the game against Ottawa. Thanks for this, Paul.
Absolutely. Thanks, Paul. We'll chat soon.
And the Growing the Game podcast rolls right along, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair, Wheel Estate, and Paul Waldo over at Royal LePage with the home realty experts there. You can check him out at 502-5355. Joining us on the phone now is Ryan Hall, the outgoing coach of the Campbell Tartans. Now, 11 years coaching there, 6 years as a head coach. How does it feel?
Feels a little weird. When you spend a lot of time in a place and you invest a lot of, not just time and effort, but really who you are as a person, it's hard to have to make that change. And, especially I'm getting a little long in the tooth, just have a couple more years till I retire. So it's going to take some getting used to, but I guess that's just part of the deal.
Yeah, for sure. Ryan, so if you're going to go out, there's no better way to go out than last year as the city and provincial champs.
Yeah, no question about that. And that's one of the things I've reflected on. That group of guys on the football team was such a great group of guys. And the trainers are part of that. We had a great group of girls that help out. And just the grade 12 kids in our school, I've taught a lot of them in English and in performance psychology, and I've really enjoyed them. And so if I have to go, it's a pretty good group of kids to go out with.
A lot of times in sports get wrapped up in wins and losses. And, they're big. If there wasn't a scoreboard, or if we weren't keeping score at stadiums or rinks, we wouldn't have scoreboards, right? But what's the thing you're going to leave? What are you happy to leave behind at Campbell? Is there a legacy? Is there a way of doing things?
Well, I think any person that takes what they do seriously really hopes that they leave a legacy. And I guess, when I got to Campbell 11 years ago, the program wasn't doing too well. They hadn't won a game in 3 years. And I think we worked hard to change the culture of the team and to try and make the team a really positive part of the school where the teachers appreciated it. The administrators appreciated what was going on. The kids were good citizens and good students and stuff like that. And, when you have 55 boys on a football team, they're not all angels. But I think I think the biggest thing was just kind of changing the mindset and changing the culture and trying to build a culture of gratitude and a culture of, you know, you have to earn what you get by working hard and nothing should be given to you. And, you know, so I hope those are some things that I've left behind.
You got a couple of years teaching now. I think you're going to Winston-Knoll. Do you plan to coach there with Chris Warnke, or what's your next plan? Because I don't imagine football's out of the cards right now.
No, football is kind of a big part of who I am. So I you know, in some way, it's going to be a part of my life till they put me under, I think. But yeah, like right now, Coach Warnke, he's got a full coaching staff up there, and it'd be a little bit weird for me to coach against my friends that I've been coaching with for years at Campbell, and coaching against kids that I know pretty well. So with just having a couple years left, I think the high school football side of things might be done for me, but I'm pretty involved with Regina Minor football, and so I'm going to try and put a lot more time and effort into that program.
Yeah, and you were telling me there's going to be like a women's team or a girls' team. Tell me about that a little bit, because I know they're expanding like in the Moosomin and Melville areas. So do we have something on board here in Regina Minor football?
Yeah, it's something we're really excited about, and it's something I've been trying to push with RMF for the last couple of years, just getting more girls playing the game, you know, right from Mighty Mites on up. And we do have a small group of girls that's had a really good experience playing it in the younger age groups. And then, of course, we've got the Riot with the women's level that are really successful and have an outstanding program for you know, kind of the older teens and adult women. But there's nothing in the middle, and you know, except for a high school girl to play for her high school team, which it's challenging. You know, that presents a lot of challenges. So, yeah, Moosomin and Melville did a great job taking the lead this spring and organizing some teams and having a home-and-home schedule of games. And so we got a call from Yorkton a week or so ago at RMF, and they want to try and get something going. And so when we heard that at RMF, we just jumped on it and said, yeah, for sure, let's do this. Let's try and get a high school girls team going. So, yeah, so I think what we're looking at is probably a fairly short season, probably try and start up around the same time that the high school teams get started. And then if there's three teams in the league, you know, that's not too many games. So, you know, probably we'd play games throughout September and probably be done by the end of September, just before Thanksgiving.
That's neat, and that's what this podcast is all about, growing the game. It seems like the game of football is growing in the women's division or girls' division. Why do you think that is? Same reason that guys like it?
I think so. I mean, you know, when you think about it, football traditionally has catered to only 50% of the demographic, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's been considered a guy's sport. And now that's opening up, just like with hockey. Hockey was the same thing for, you know, forever. Like when I was a kid, it was a really odd thing to hear of a girl playing hockey. And if a girl was playing, she had to play with the boys because there weren't enough to have girls teams. But yeah, I mean, that's just a huge demographic of growth potential for football. And so I think we're foolish if we don't take every opportunity we can to try and give girls the chance to play tackle football, just like the guys have the easy chance to do it.
Two more quick questions for Ryan Hall on the Growing the Game podcast, outgoing coach of the Campbell Tartans, defending city and provincial champs. Well, three questions. What kind of team do you leave behind? Because I know you graduate some pretty good football players. What kind of team will Campbell have going into this year?
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, we did have an outstanding team and really some fantastic grade 12s. You know, I think we've got seven or eight of them that are going on to post-secondary football with the Rams and the Huskies and the Thunder. So that's really exciting. So yeah, it's going to be a tougher go this year. I think there's, you know, our team and Leboldus, for example, you know, have had been pretty strong for the last number of years. And then you've got the up-and-coming teams like Riffle. You know, they've been on the doorstep the last couple of years, and I think they're really ready to step up and be one of the next top teams in the league. And then Miller as well. Miller, just like last year, they didn't have many grade 12s, and they had an outstanding group of athletes on their team. So to me, Miller and Riffle, those are the two teams to really look out for this year.
Okay, so question here. How has high school football changed from when you started at Campbell to now leaving? What would be the biggest change in high school football, and football in general?
Oh, wow. I mean, it's just so much more technical, you know, with the use of game film. That was something that, you know, back in the day when you and I played with the Rams, we did game film, but I don't know about your high school, but we never looked at game film in high school. It wasn't a thing. So, I mean, that, and then you add the technology of things like Huddle, where you can telestrate and do high, you know, sort your plays, and you can predict, you know, the play calling of the other coaches. You know, there's so many technical things that are available for high school coaches now that, you know, a decade or two ago were strictly professional level things. So that's really big. I mean, the other thing that's huge, I think, is coaching has just become so much more deliberate and intentional as far as protecting the players. And, you know, back when we played, I never remember having a practice, like when I was in high school, I never remember having a practice where we didn't go full pads and go full contact. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, we've gotten so much better in not only teaching the skills of blocking and tackling with safe contact and stuff like that, but just I think most coaches, you know, they're really starting to get a lot more thoughtful and just think, like, what level of contact do I need to practice what I'm trying to develop here? And if we're, you know, if we're trying to develop blocking and tackling, let's do some drills that are organized and run as safely as possible so the kids can practice the skills. Yeah. And if we're trying to get good at running our plays, then let's not be banging the heck out of each other, because that's not the objective. We're just trying to, the offense is trying to get good at executing their plays. The defense is trying to get good at reacting and pursuing. We don't need to beat our teammates up in order to do that. So to me, I think those would be the two biggest differences, just the level of technical advancements, and then just the huge and really, I think, necessary focus on health and safety of the players.
Even the coach's lingo, right? Like you used to back in the day, knock his head off, kill him, drill him. You even change your lingo a little bit too, don't you?
Well, for sure. Like, language is super important. You know, the language conveys the attitude, and you know, we never want football to not be an aggressive sport. You know, we want it to be aggressive. We want it to be a sport that requires toughness and physicality, because that's the kind of game it is. But you can be aggressive and tough without trying to injure another person. And I think that's the mentality that we've really made a lot of headway with in the last, 7 to 10 years. There's still always room to grow and things to get better at, and coaches to get more educated and stuff like that. But just the change in the last, 7 to 10 years in the mindset of football coaches is just phenomenal. And the awareness of player safety and the priority that's taken, I think that's the necessary thing we need to keep the game great, to keep it popular, and to keep it growing.
Hey, Ryan, did you like that tackle that Marcel Young of BC threw on that streaker running on the field? Was that a good tackle or what?
Well, okay, so if that happened in a game, I would say no. Okay, that's not how we want to tackle. We don't want to hit people.
Yeah.
But the vigilante justice, you know, I think I remember back in the 80s, they had this video called Crunch Time, an NFL video, and I think it was Chuck Bednarik from the Baltimore Colts. I think he did that one time and to a streaker that ran onto the field back in the 60s or whatever, and it just reminded me of that. So, no, I wouldn't want my players hitting like that, but if some clown's going to try and be an idiot at a game, you know, sometimes a little justice like that is probably okay.
Sometimes when you play with a rusty nail, you get it, right? And lastly, talking about coaching, you had a book come out in December. What's the title and where can people get it? Because I knew you were talking about it, but it slipped under my radar. My apologies. What's the book all about? Where can they get it?
Okay, the book's called Coaching Canadian Football. It's a book project that I helped to organize with Football Canada and Human Kinetics, which is probably the North America's leading publisher for sports and physical training books. And so it's a collection of chapters specifically for Canadian coaches, everywhere from grassroots minor football right up to articles. You know, there's a chapter for university coaches and junior coaches, and we've got chapters written by CFL coaches, university coaches, junior coaches, high school coaches, and from, you know, basically from Atlantic to Pacific. And I've heard lots of great reviews on it. We have some local content. Coach Scott McCauley from the Thunder contributed to a chapter. Coach Mason from the Rams contributed. Coach Flory from up in Saskatoon, the U of S Huskies, he did a chapter as well. And so we've got some good Saskatchewan content in it. So you can get it at the Human Kinetics website. I think you can get it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I believe, I haven't checked chapters lately, but I know they were carrying it in the winter. So you might be able to even just drop down to chapters and pick it up.
Well, maybe I'll go do that because I love football. I'll tell you what, man, this is the Growing the Game podcast. It's rolling along. I think this is episode 37. I've kind of lost count, which is good. It means we're doing all right. But it's a guy like this, Ryan Hall, that's helped to grow the game in Regina and Saskatchewan with tackling camps, books, and, of course, great coaching over at Campbell. We hope you're not done with football. And, hey, we'll see you around a field somewhere. Thanks for this, Ryan.
Absolutely, Mike. It's a pleasure.
Well, just ahead of getting to know Charleston Hughes a bit better on the Growing the Game podcast, brought to you by Mako Real Estate and Paul Waldo at Royal LePage Realty, we are going to talk about the Regina Riot. Now, just over a week ago, the van belonging to Riot manager Bree Darren and her significant other player Amory Darren was stolen. And in that van, they had their personal belongings, including car seats and the Riot team uniforms. Well, the van has been recovered. We don't know the shape of the van right now, according to the cops. They're not telling us anyway. But the Riot did get their jerseys back, and they'd like to thank everyone for the support in the past week, especially the Regina Thunder and other football organizations who stepped up and generously offered their uniforms to the Riot. But they're going to be in their red uniforms for the game on Sunday when they take on the Saskatoon Valkyries at Mosaic Stadium, as that's the WWCFL Championship. Get out and support women's football in Saskatchewan. We got a classic North versus South battle. As we continue along here on the Growing the Game podcast, we now catch up with Charleston Hughes, who had an unbelievable debut in Rough Rider colors against the Argos last Friday.
Time now for Player Profile with Charleston Hughes. Tell us about how you got your name.
Well, my mother gave it to me.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I guess her favorite actor was Charlton Heston.
Okay.
So she tried to name me after him, and then the hospital messed up my birth certificate and put Charleston Hughes. So it stuck.
That's a cool name, though. It stuck and it stands out.
Yeah, it stuck. It stands out. You know, I can appreciate the name. You know, I haven't met too many Charlestons in my lifetime. Maybe one other, but, oh, actually two. It's our family in Calgary. They named their child after me. So his name is Charleston.
Well, there might be a few Rider fans named their child after you. You had a heck of a debut. Where does that rank in your games in terms of debuts or eye-opening games?
It was one of the better ones. It's up there in the top five, but I think I got a couple others that were a little bit better, but yeah.
So how does the atmosphere here compare to McMahon Stadium?
Tons of more people. A lot more green. They don't call it a sea of green for nothing, man. And I love it because, you know, my celebration is surfing, so I'll surf in a sea of green anytime.
So I was going to ask you, how did you come up with that surfing celebration?
I don't know, man. It just came along, you know. I have no clue, really. I decided I wanted to go snowboarding and try to learn how to surf and stuff like that, and I kind of took it up and got good at it, and I was like, I'm going to just start doing it as a celebration. That'll work. I ain't seen nobody else do it, so it
works. Are you better at snowboarding or surfing?
Snowboarding.
Snowboarding?
Yeah.
And yeah, there's no mountains around here, so maybe that's what you miss Calgary for that reason, or what?
Well, I'm going to tie my snowboard up to the back of somebody's ATX and have them just freaking take off and go on a four-wheeler and just work it.
Yeah.
And I'll just be on the back just riding.
So does Charleston Hughes have to look down at his jersey and look at the green and go, what's going on here, man? Are you used to it now, man?
Yeah, I'm good. I mean, I'm used to it now. I didn't forget all about red. What's that? Nothing red over here but blood.
Yeah. Does 39 mean something to you, the number?
It does not. Yeah, it was I started off in the league as a linebacker, and 39 is more of a linebacker, DB kind of number. So once I moved down to defensive end, I decided, I'll keep it. I wanted to switch to a D, my college number, which was 96. Mm-hmm. But I decided that, you know what, 39 fits.
You're playing they had you lined up all over the place last game at linebacker. How'd you like the way they were deploying you the last game?
It's actually pretty fun. You know, I've played the position before. I've played it under a couple different D coordinators, and that's the kind of position I've always been, is like a rover style defensive end coverage.
Yeah.
In pass rush, linebacker, sack the quarterback, throw the ball into the stadium, dance all over the place. Smooth mamma jamma.
I love it. You know, my favorite play from Friday's game wasn't a sack, wasn't the surfing. It was
a screen pass to James Wilder Jr., and Van Ziel comes out to block you. I think it was Van Ziel. And you took him out and his teammate out. What are you thinking when you know, you got to make a play like that? What's running through your head? Like, you know, because it's not a glamorous play, per se.
It's not a glamorous play. It's one of those gritty type plays, and you know you got to have a positive effect in the game no matter what the scenario is. And, you know, with that scenario right there, when there's a back, an offensive lineman, and you're the only one in sight, and it's tunnel vision, you can't see anybody else, you got to figure out what's the best thing that can happen right here, what's the best thing that'll work.
Yeah, so they're going to have some golf lady LPGA golfers coming here later. They're going to try to knock some balls off the deck onto the field with some Rough Rider players, I was told. I don't know if you know that or not, but are you a golfer? Do you like to golf?
I am a golfer, yeah. I like to golf, and I'm pretty sure I'd probably crush one way farther than they can.
If you weren't a football player, what would you be doing?
If I wasn't a football player, I would probably be a dancer in Las Vegas.
A dancer in Las Vegas?
Yeah, I'd be a dancer in Las Vegas.
What song, if you had to dance to one song for the rest of your life, when you entered the room, this song came on and you'd start dancing, what song is it?
I don't care who you are, where you're from, what you need, as long as you love me.
Outstanding. Charleston Hughes, great name, great voice, great moves in the field. Thanks for this.
Appreciate it.
And the Growing the Game podcast rolls right along with our next guest, Scott Flory, head coach of the University of Saskatchewan Huskies. Now, last I saw you was Friday night in Regina on the Argonaut sideline. You were with Mark Trestman's team. Tell us about your experience going to camp with the Argonauts.
Oh, yeah, I just it seems like a lot of old coaches and players that I know from Montreal were there. So there was an opportunity. They reached out with my old offensive line coach to spend some time with Jonathan Heimbach and obviously with Mark. So Mark and AC and Jaime had reached out to me and asked if I wanted to come be a guest coach. And, you know, when you get an opportunity to grow and develop as a coach, you don't turn those opportunities down. So it was a great experience for me to be able to, you know, be with Mark as a player and then to see him from the other side, to see how he conducts, coaches meetings and from an install, point of view and, just to kind of behind the scenes, not what the players don't see. And what I didn't see as a player. So it was a great opportunity for me. And then it was just something that, you know, going down there and just being a fan and being able to watch the game from the sidelines was great and connect with old friends on both sides of both the Riders and the Argos.
Scott, what was an eye-opener for you from a coaching point of view now that you didn't understand as a player?
You know, it was a big part of it for me was how Coach Trestman really conducts his coaching meetings and his staff meetings, and then also the discussion that goes into not about personnel but players and managing the players and managing their reps and managing the situations, and then how to make adjustments on the fly and how he does that. Where, you know, if he just, you know, you got the analytics side of things where you're running numbers and plays and pitch count and all that kind of stuff, and then you got the feel side of things where my guys aren't feeling it today, or they're, you know, we can tell we've got some injured guys, or we got some guys that are lagging, and, you know, to let up or to pull back, and that kind of stuff was really good. And then also obviously was on the technical side and schematics is just the you know, Mark's grown the offense a little bit from last time I was with him in 2012. So in 5-6 years, just how much offensively he's kind of grown the offense, and so that was great. That was great to see and be able to ask him a lot of technical questions on the back end.
Is there a lot that you think you can bring from the pro game down to the university ranks? I know it's a little more mature up in the pro ranks, but do you think you can transition that with the, you know, your two quarterbacks and Siemens and Nias and just your personnel?
Yeah, I think our guys can handle it. We run a shell of the same system, kind of the two quasi systems I was in for the biggest bulk of time, and that's kind of to be honest with you, going throughout the CFL, Michael, where it's kind of you see the same type of offense with the same nomenclature, the same kind of structure in Toronto. You see it in Ottawa. You see it, well, not so much in Montreal anymore, but you see it now in Saskatchewan. You see it in Edmonton. You see it in BC now with Jarius Jackson going out there, where it's a lot of the same nomenclature. It's a lot of the same some of the same route structure, and then it comes down to the finite minutia detail and how do you teach it, and what are you actually trying to accomplish versus different opponents, and what are you actually trying to do. But from a structural standpoint, our structure is our guys could offensively seamlessly go into any of those offenses and understand structurally. Then it comes down to the teaching points and the nuances of what you're trying to do.
Was that a surreal moment for you, Regina boy? You're standing on the sidelines with the guys you went to war with, the Tressman and Calvillo and those guys, and you're a coach of a university team in this province. It just must be like a pinch me moment almost.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I mean, it's weird as a local born and raised guy coming to the University of Saskatchewan as a kid and then being drafted and out to Montreal and being out there, and then you just fall in love, you get engrossed in where you are and the logo and everything like that, and then to come back and obviously buying in, and then with putting on, being out there training camp with Argos, I'm like, oh my God, I've hated these guys for 15 years. How can I? But you got to be able to separate all that. You know what I mean? And it's for me, it was about the learning experience and about the growth and development of myself as a young coach and just looking how the best guys in some of the best in North America and how these guys do it. And being able to try to take a little bits and pieces from that.
In your self-critique, Scott Flory, what do you want to do a better job of as a coach this year going into your second year?
That's a great question. Everything. I think that I like to think I'm a continuous learner. I'm not. I think everybody's kind of got their own stubbornness to certain things, but I think that changes. That's a big part of being a professional athlete. As you see, it's just the only constant is change and being ever evolving and always trying to get better and always want to make myself better. So a big part for me is managing training camp and how I want to take approach to that and how we manage training camp this year. So I don't want to run into the issues of injuries, because it's such a short season for us in university football that an injury is just catastrophic. I mean, 2 weeks, that's a quarter of your season gone. You just can't afford those injuries. So I've got to be able to manage training camp as well as being able to build up the resiliency in our athletes and being able to put the structure in and teach the techniques that we want to do. So that's a big part of how I want to get better, absolutely, throughout training camp. And then in season is just evolving the game planning aspect of it and how to attack teams. And, sometimes you just got to take a little bit of a step back from a different perspective and look at that.
Talking to Paul Waldo, one of your coaches, he said he thinks as a coaching staff, and this wasn't a shot at you, he thought you did a great job, especially coming in late. He thinks you guys need to get a little bit better as a coaching staff situationally. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with Paul. Paul, yeah, absolutely. He's bang on that. It's that situational awareness and also, like the biggest part of coaching is just being able to grow and develop, create a relationship with your athletes. And then on the field is you want to put those athletes in the best situation possible and give them the tools and the skills to be able to do their job. And if we're not doing that, then that's on us as coaches. If we put that linebacker in the hole to make the tackle and he gets beat, well, that's on the athlete, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to be better from our end at putting those guys in that position to be able to succeed. And then it's on the athlete to finish the play and to make that catch and to make that throw and to make that block. But absolutely, it all starts, I think, with accountability within our culture here at the University of Saskatchewan is that we're always pointing the finger at ourselves first and what can I do better? How can I make this better? And it's no different from player to coach, coach to player. And for us as coaches, this offseason has been a huge part of that. A
couple more quick questions with Scott Flory here on the Growing the Game podcast, brought to you by Mako Real Estate and Paul Waldo, as a matter of fact, Royal LePage Realty. You know, Paul Waldo is a guy that must love football. He's the guy that drives from Regina down there to help you coach. Just talk for a minute about your coaching staff, because, as you look around the league, you guys got a lot of guys with CFL experience and a lot of guys that would, I would think, would relate to younger athletes.
Yeah, I know we do. We've got a lot of guys that have been in locker rooms for a long time. So I think that there's a lot of, they're a big part of football is the respect and it's hard to break into as a coach when you've got athletes. They want to be able to understand that you understand what they're going through. So a big part of our coaching staff is absolutely empathetic, because we played at a high level. Now, what we've got to get better at is making sure that what we're teaching and how we're approaching the scheme of what we're giving the athletes, that we're putting them in the best situation possible, and that it's not too much or too little on both sides of things. You don't want to patronize and say, oh, we can't do that, and you also don't want to overload and say, hey, have 55 different routes.
Yeah.
Yeah. that's too much,
yeah.
Right? So we've got to find that balance there, and I think that for us and our coaching staff, a big part of this whole winter and this offseason was just coming together as a group and being able to learn how each other coaches, because that was a big part of our process last year. So we're getting better at it. We are, and the athletes, I think, are feeling that. And they're getting better. They're doing their part in the gym and on the field, running and lifting, getting ready for the season. So we expect better results without a doubt.
Scott, I would think that it's a lot harder, no disrespect to you. You seem very scholarly, and I'll get to that in a second. But I would think it's a little harder nowadays to be a student athlete than it was back when you played, or even I'm older than you back when I played, in the sense that the playbooks on the football side are so much bigger than they were back in the day.
Absolutely, and I tell those guys right off the start, any recruit, that we've got a huge expectation of the athlete, of the student athlete. I mean, and we also have to be realistic in that they go to school as well, and they are student athletes. And so we try to, off the field of play, reduce that burden as much as possible with academic supports and lifting supports and all that kind of stuff. But it is a huge demand on the players. The playbook is, it absolutely is. We just ask more and more, and I think that you know, for me and for us as coaches, we just want to stay ahead of the curve, right? I mean, we want to do our part to stay ahead of the curve and make everybody else play catch up, but do it in a realistic approach with our athletes to make sure that they're not being overburdened, because there is a lot going on. I mean, we're talking about 17 to 23-year-old athletes with, you know, they're adjusting to school and life and living on their own. And I mean, there's just so many factors at play. So our guys do a great job of it, but there absolutely is huge requirements on them as student athletes.
Would you still like to be lining up on the field of playing after standing on the sidelines? There's some pretty impressive athletes out there right now.
No, I hurt just looking at guys do bench press and squats now. It just makes my back hurt. So I'm good. Everybody out there, they're doing their time, and the sun sets on all of us as athletes. So I have no desire to go back out there on the field.
You know, I watched three of those old-timers at that game on Friday. Charleston Hughes had a whale of a football game. I mean, he's not going to get three sacks every game, but he, you know, the one play on the screen pass to Wilder Jr., he sacrifices his body to take out Van Ziel and takes out another lineman too. That was an unbelievable play. Ricky Ray gets smoked by Mac Henry. And think about Ricky Ray. He's picking himself up, probably putting his rib in place. He's all winded. He's got to get the call from the bench. He's got to call it in the huddle. He's got to call it at the line. And he takes his team on an 8-play drive to get him back in the game. That's amazing. And then I look at Brendan Labatt, and you'd be able to speak to this. Here's a guy that plays center and plays guard in professional football and is doing it into his 30s and doing it at an unbelievable level. Like, just talk about those three athletes and what, because I don't think we give them enough credit. I just like watching good football players. I don't care what team they're playing on.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think that a testament to those guys that play into their 30s and late into their 30s especially is that they take care of their body. They love the game. They love the sport. They train and they take care of it. And a little good luck along the way never hurt. But absolutely those guys. I mean, and they've been mainstays basically on teams. There isn't much movement or mobility. I think all those guys have played on maybe two teams. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially like Brendan, he is absolutely an elite football player, elite offensive lineman in the league, and Charleston as well. I mean, you know, it didn't take long for him to find a home, and obviously Ricky's done, I mean, he's a future Hall of Famer, and you could probably argue those other two are as well. So it's, that's the beauty of the CFL and the beauty of those guys, and, you know, when they can still get it done in the early mid-30s, that you know that they're elite guys.
We had Ryan Hall on the podcast earlier talking about that coaching book, Coaching Canadian Football, and you wrote a chapter, I understand. What's your chapter about in that book, Scott?
Yeah, Ryan kind of rope-a-doped me into that. I didn't know what I was getting into with this. it started out as a – no, it was just a piece on play calling. So I just put in, you know, kind of my two cents. There's so much that goes into being a play caller, and I don't know a fraction of what the elite play callers know out there, but I just kind of gave my two cents on calling plays and how you want to structure it. And, again, give the opportunity for the athletes. What are you teaching them? What are they looking at to make those plays? And just trying to put them in the best situation possible. So I gave my two cents on it, and it's ever evolving. That's one thing. I mean, the things that I believe are steadfastly new, you know, the more you know, the more you realize how little you know. So
yeah,
that was my two cents on it.
Hey, Scott, lastly, what's your goal? What do you want to do? Like, I would always think a guy that he's in a university football program, I don't want to say owe it, but I almost feel like the coach owes it to a recruiting class to probably stay for at least one recruiting class. And I'm not saying you're going out the door, don't get me wrong, but do you have a goal to go to professional football, or are you just one of those guys that you're looking at this year and that's it?
You know, honestly, Michael, I've been approached numerous times and have rejected as a chance to go coach professionally. And not that it's not a goal of mine at some point in the future. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is I got a young family. I'm really happy. I love the University of Saskatchewan. I love dealing with these athletes. You know, I do. I love to see the growth and development of these guys. And it's a great situation for me and my family, and I absolutely love it. So, you know, I'm still young. Yeah. I like to think I'm still young. I'm just, you know, barely in my 40s here. So I got a lot of football left to learn and a lot of football left to coach. But I have zero desire to go anywhere and for without a doubt the immediacy. And I love being here. I love these guys. And I'm just focused on 2018, yeah. Really, to be honest with you. I'm focused on August and getting into camp and getting ready for the season.
Okay, so you guys have a high school camp coming up here at the end of July, August. Is that in fact the deal?
Yeah, we do some young guys camp. These summer camps have gone on for a long time, 10, 15 years now. So we're carrying forth the tradition. There's some young camps. There's a young guys camp, grade 7, 8, 9, yeah, and then grade 10, 11, 12 is the week after at the end of July, the last 2 weeks of July into early August. So you can just, young athletes, they want to go just huskies.usas.ca, and they can find the information on there. And they're really fun camps. It's a really great opportunity, especially to get the rural kids out and get them out and get them exposed and see our stuff. But to get exposed and have a little bit of teachings from us and some of the staff guys around here, and we just have a lot of fun with it.
Get a taste of the campus life there at the U of S. Hey, thanks for this, Scott. We appreciate it, and we'll see you around.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate everything you're doing for amateur football, man. You're the man. Appreciate it.
And that brings to a close another edition of Growing the Game with Ballsy, episode 37, as we continue to grow, and we grow because of people like you. If you like what you hear, please share with your family and your friends and your football contacts. That's how we keep this game of football that we all love alive and growing in Saskatchewan. If you'd like to have me pursue a story, email me mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. You can also hit me up at that email address if you want to sponsor this podcast. And a reminder, you can catch me on The Wolf Monday to Friday, 6 to 10, 104.9 The Wolf FM, and on the Rider Radio Network, 620 CKRM, 3 hours before every game, and then after we're taking your calls on the Sports Cage Radio Roundtable. Until next week, we'll talk to you later.